her is Aarti Veerkood, and she's an epidemiologist at the New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene. And she'll be presenting on the novel use of big data to analyze the documentation of diseases on the non-alcoholic fatty liver spectrum in electronic health records.
Thank you all for being here. I know the weather outside is gorgeous, so I'm pretty impressed that you're all here, but I might have the summer solstice to thank for that. So I'm going to talk to you guys about HubData. I'm going to start off with a really brief intro of NAFLD and NASH Epi, and then get into the data source before I talk about my analysis. So non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, or NAFLD, it lives on the spectrum of fatty liver disease and is characterized by fat deposits that accumulate in the liver, causing steatosis, and that can lead to NASH. This whole liver disease spectrum is known as the hepatic manifestation of metabolic syndrome, so they're very linked. And ultimately, if a patient develops NASH, they're at much higher risk for cirrhosis and liver cancer and other forms. Does anyone here know what the prevalence of NAFLD among American adults is estimated to be?
20%.
Oh, very close. Yeah. Some of the ranges include that. Right now, the estimated prevalence is around 1 in 3 American adults, which is pretty shocking because most people actually don't even know what NAFLD is. and this prevalence is estimated based off of, NHANES did a liver enzyme survey and took a lot of tests to generate some estimates. And we also base this prevalence on the prevalence of obesity and type 2 diabetes, which are known to be the major comorbidities associated with NAFLD and NASH. So taking a step away from this disease and kind of examining the hub data source, I'll talk a little bit about my bureau, PCIP. It was founded in 2005 with this mission to help small practices in New York City adopt electronic health records and use them meaningfully. And I know some of you in the audience are pretty familiar with the work that we do at PCIP on the Hub and Macroscope project. We were able to help over 1,300 providers adopt electronic health records and reach meaningful use stage 2 attestation, which was a great success for us. So combined with this idea that EHR use has more than quadrupled since 2001, it's really exciting to know that data that was previously sitting dormantly in doctors' offices are now being transformed into actionable information distributed either through maps or trends or provider dashboards. And so we definitely wanted to take advantage of that and examine conduct this analysis with that data. So before I talk about the analysis, some of you might not know how the hub querying system works. So I'm a Lord of the Rings fan, so apologies for the nerd out. But imagine you have patient Gandalf who's going to the Shire practice to see his provider, Dr. Elrond, and there are 9 patients at the Shire practice. And this practice happens to be a PCIP practice that uses a specific electronic health record vendor called eClinicalWorks. Our collaboration at PCIP with ECW has allowed us to generate the hub system. So we generate a question at PCIP, and that could be how many patients at each practice are over the age of 100 and have diabetes. Now, that question actually has 2 questions embedded in it, a numerator and a denominator. And we need to know both the patients that subscribe to the query criteria that we set up, but also we need to know how many patients are at that practice. So we submit these questions over the practice servers. So remember now, the data is staying at the practices. They don't live with us. And we submit that overnight, and the next morning we get aggregate counts back returned from the practice. So we don't know Gandalf's exact patient data, but we do know that 1 in 9 patients at the Shire practice fit our query criteria. So the hub is a pretty expansive network of practices. We have over 700 practices in all of 5 boroughs. The map on the right that I just pointed out actually shows our penetration in the care-seeking population in New York City. The denominator is based off of CHS data. And you can see in some neighborhoods, we see as many as 1 in 2 of the care-seeking population in New York City, which represents about 2 million patients as of 2014, which is a quarter of the New York City population. So it's really big, and the practices span community health centers and hospital clinics, but they're predominantly independent practices. So in this study, we wanted to look at the documentation of this disease because prevalence estimates are kind of, you know, not definite, and we wanted to see, well, maybe we can get some firmer information by examining this, how it's being documented at hub practices. So we queried the ICD-9 code because at the time ICD-10s weren't available, and that combines NAFLD and NASH cases. And we evaluated the sample across each year because our data was set up cross-sectionally from 2011 to 2014, and graphed the percent of cases and cases per 100,000, and tested the normality of the data because our data is often skewed, as it was in this case. So instead of using means and t-tests, we use medians and Wilcox and rank sum tests to evaluate the significance of changes from 2011 to 2014. And finally, we generated some GEE models because we were interested in understanding the relationship between the patient characteristic profile and documentation of these diseases. So I'm going to step back from the analysis really quick to talk about our inclusion criteria. So you guys may be familiar with this phenomenon, but over time, providers do document better in their electronic health record. And we didn't want this artifact to be present in our analysis or in many of our other types of analyses. And you can see here, this is how BMI is documented by the providers, and the percent of practices that meet meaningful use, and that just increases over time. So what we did was a correlation analysis to evaluate what areas of the record actually indicate that providers are using their EHR meaningfully, and we generated a set of criterion that we typically use. Now, we modify these criterion to suit the needs of the analysis. For example, because this analysis was going to examine patients' BMI status, we up the criteria for BMI, but generally these are the standards we use to make sure that we're analyzing data from providers who are using their electronic health record reliably, and we made sure that they were using it for every year of the study analysis. So obviously our sample size dropped significantly from the number of queries that actually returned to the number of practices that remained, but we were still looking at over 500,000 patients in 2014. So the first step is always to just like examine whether the patient population is changing dramatically from year to year, while we're not trying to say anything conclusively or suggest that we're looking at the same patient population. We do want to make sure that there are not any dramatic changes. And for the most part, there weren't. Most of the there's slight increase in the number of patients, number of total hub patients that are being seen at independent practices, but nothing significantly different. And additionally, there are some slight changes across certain race groups, specifically among missing, you'll see that that has decreased. So even our application of the super cohort criteria is not sufficient to kind of capture how that documentation piece is improving, but we didn't believe that was a very influential factor in this particular analysis. And likewise for diabetes status and BMI status. So the most compelling point that we saw here with this analysis was that while we expected that the estimated prevalence would be somewhere around 20% or so, we ended up seeing that 0.79% of the population had an NAFLD case documented. And we believe that this isn't to suggest that NAFLD is just not existing in New York City, but rather there is tremendous under-documentation of this disease. And that makes sense because NAFLD and NASH are not part of standard medical care screening. We don't expect, we would have been very impressed if we saw the projected prevalence. But that being said, it's not to say that there weren't a significant amount of patients that had NAFLD and NASH, and so we still wanted to examine the patient characteristics among those people who did have the disease documented. So what we said, and notice here that we've got a y-axis of per 100,000 PCIP patients, we did see a doubling from 2011 of documentation of this disease, and it was a significant increase over this time period. And that significant increase was present in all of the patient characteristic subgroups I'm going to go through right now. So with the main feature we saw with all the patient characteristics is that the biggest increases happened among the patient subgroups that were at the highest risk for NAFLD or NASH. So we see that among the older patients, the ones from 40 to 59 and 60 to 100, they had the largest increases over time, and they also have the highest rates of documentation reliably, especially those who are 40 to 59. When you're looking at this race graph, it can get a little confusing. Typically with chronic disease in New York City, we expect to see that the minority patients, black patients and Hispanic patients, have the highest rates, but actually you'll see that it's highest among Asians and Hispanic patients, which is true for non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. And we are in the process of trying to understand why this dip is happening in our data. But again, significant increases in all patient subgroups and highest increases in the race groups, Asian and Hispanic patients, who have the highest risk for the disease. The literature is pretty convoluted when it comes to differences between sex, but in our data, we saw that documentation rates were higher among males, so we can't say whether it's necessarily happening among the higher risk group in this particular patient characteristic. But then again, when we look at BMI and diabetes, we see the same trends. Individuals with a higher BMI, so those individuals who are obese and overweight, have the higher rates of documentation and higher increases, the increases were significant across all groups, and you see the same thing for diabetes. And then for the results of our GE model, these kind of reiterate some of the things we saw with the documentation rates, but you see that among Asian patients, the odds of documentation were highest, and also among Hispanic patients, as well as individuals between the ages of 40 and 59, and those who have diabetes and or are obese and overweight. What was most interesting about this modeling is that when you're adjusting for the patient characteristics, the differences across each year, the odds, while significant increases are happening, are fairly moderate. So that's suggestive that these patient characteristics are changing in such a way that are really driving this increase of documentation. So in conclusion, while the median documentation rate did increase significantly over the study analysis period, NAFLD and NASH is still being dramatically underdocumented, which makes it a little difficult to try and understand potentially if the population rates are changing or providers are getting just better at capturing this for a multitude of reasons. Documentation did double over the years, and the largest increases were seen among patients with the highest risk of NAFLD and NASH, which is suggestive that maybe these patients are going to the hospital or getting information from their ER visits that suggests that they should go to their primary care provider and tell them that they have NAFLD and NASH. But we can't confirm any of this, so there are definitely barriers to documentation and diagnosis that may require further exploration. And just to take it a few steps further, while, you know, it would be great if we could say after this that we should tell our providers to start screening for NAFLD or NASH, that might not be recommended. You know, the treatment processes for NAFLD and NASH are closely linked to those that you would have for a patient who is obese or has type 2 diabetes. So potentially we may need to wait until the implications of the disease are better identified. However, there is research that suggests that diagnosis of NAFLD and NASH can be helpful in preventing more severe outcomes of your metabolic syndrome progression. But regardless, hub data absolutely can be used to identify New York City populations appropriate for research and intervention, and we feel like that's the strongest piece of this analysis, you know, that we were able to identify that this is not a population that would be great to conduct an NAFLD intervention in, because that patient population isn't being really well captured. There are a lot of limitations to hub data, and you'll notice that I have not mentioned aggregate data, the fact that it's aggregated as one of them. We're really excited about the fact that we're trying to improve our epidemiological methodology to address those things, and just a shameless plug for a roundtable I'm doing tomorrow. If you want to talk more about big data and epidemiological methods, please come by. But like I said, there are several limitations to our data set. We're only as good as how a provider chooses to document in the hub, and we feel like we address this through all the labor PCIP employees go through with helping and supporting our practices in attaining meaningful use. And now that those programs are kind of ramping down, we identify other opportunities to keep them incentivized, to keep documenting and doing good work there. And additionally, we apply the super cohort inclusion criteria to kind of prevent any biases there from providers who aren't using their EHR meaningfully. Additionally, we cannot dedupe across multiple practices, but we've done some analyses that suggest that we shouldn't be too worried about those that being a problem. However, we're trying to do more work to understand whether we need to address that issue or not in our analyses. And finally, one of the biggest limitations is our runtime and query structure. It's why I couldn't stand here in front of you today and tell you every risk factor for NAFLD and compare it to every possible patient characteristic documented in EHR. There's only so many things we can query at a time. It would have been great to query our socioeconomic proxy variable, poverty group, but unfortunately we didn't have the bandwidth to do that. So again, if you have any questions, I'll be around the conference till tomorrow, and you can send me an email. And I'd really like to give a special shout out to all those individuals who work at PCIP and make this kind of research possible. Thank you.
So why NAFLD? So why is the city health department doing this work?
So that's definitely my interest. we were exploring some work around different liver diseases, and I realized that the prevalence of NAFLD is really high in terms of estimation, and I thought that was just really curious why aren't we giving it more attention? And so my first guess was because it's not that important. You know, you probably have type 2 diabetes or multiple other comorbidities, and the treatment processes are the same right now, so maybe it's not that important. But then I did a little bit more digging, and it turns out, you know, a lot of people are suggesting that it's a little bit more severe than we previously thought and could put you in a different risk group that's more severe for your chronic disease progression or your metabolic syndrome progression. So it could be useful to see, and we have a pretty large data set. So when we're talking 0.79% of our 2 million patients, it's still a lot of patients to be examining what's going on with this disease. So we just want to get a sense of, you know, what's the prevalence in our data set, and or rather, what's the percentage in our data set, and if we can say anything interesting about the population.
Sure. Help me out. Isn't it the case, though, that you have alcohol as a contributor, but you also have obesity in the absence of alcohol as a contributor? And they're both driving the occurrence of this condition.
Right. So yeah, everything on the metabolic syndrome is supposedly driving NAFLD, and alcohol, well, this is non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, so it's a bit harder. It can get fuzzier in terms of diagnosis, but there's nothing in the literature that suggests that would be confused. I'm sorry, I don't know that answers your question, but yes, you are right.
But
those are
you looking
drivers.
At a consequence of the obesity epidemic.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah. I think I've heard it said that, you know, as hepatitis C comes under treatment pharmacologically, that this may emerge as a leading cause for liver transplantation.
Oh, yeah. Yes, that is absolutely right.
I have a quick question.
Sure.
So did you look at any other codes that, you know, maybe the providers are coding liver disease but not specifically NAFLD?
Yeah, so we sat with a bunch of people. The problem, we haven't been able to do follow-up analyses on that track yet, but that coding documentation is a big problem for us. We thought that this was being more conservative. So at least we knew that if they're coding this, they mean NAFLD. And that's how we selected our codes instead of going with a broader bucket and capturing things that could include hepatitis C. That was our major concern. But yeah, you're absolutely right. And we do some work with the hepatitis C groups, and those rates are a little higher when we're looking at those codes. So I don't know. But yeah, definitely something we would want to pursue eventually.
Was your search based on ICD code then?
Yes, to query for NAFLD, yeah. We have some capacity, in case anyone's interested, in wildcarding in our patient note history. It's very difficult to do. You get a lot of noise. It's very hard to clean those aggregated counts because, like I said, you know, when you're getting that data back, we can't really sift through and say, okay, well, this percentage was this phrase that we're not quite sure is fitting what we want to talk about, or this was part of the patient's family history, not their history. Things like that gets really hard. Yeah. So the aggregation happens either at the practice or provider level with our data. This analysis is at the practice level, but we definitely do analyses at the provider level where you're getting a count of how many patients that provider saw that fit whatever criteria you established. Yeah?
Can you talk a little bit about the software you're using to operate your queries and how that interacts with what you're using to analyze?
Sure. So... okay, so just to break down my process, I'm not a huge expert on our data extraction processes, but essentially what we do is eClinicalWorks has a platform that allows us to submit SQL queries into it to extract that data from the practice servers to get that count. You know, we have some cool tools that we use. One of them is called like the factory process. One of our teammates actually made it. So it helps us generate that SQL code really quickly and in the blocks that we know that the areas of the record that we know we can extract from, because obviously we can't do it for everything. Submit that into a query generator. The query generator is run in eClinicalWorks' platform to extract the data. Then we get it back in our SQL server, and then frequently we just import it into SAS to analyze. We're currently in the process. I don't know. I've heard some speakers speak about Tableau. We're currently in the process of investigating whether since Tableau can do direct extraction from SQL and is really interested in kind of competing with SAS for statistical analysis purposes, we're exploring whether we can regenerate our entire macrotized process of pulling data through Tableau instead of SAS. Yeah?
You can't use SAS to the SQL server and pull it?
We can. We do. Yes.
Can you
pass
through the SQL code to the other server?
Pass through the SQL. Sorry, I see what you're saying. So the value of doing the Tableau, just to clarify my point, I think yes, my answer is yes to you, but the point of Tableau is for visualization software. SAS can't compete really quite as well with some of these other products, so that's why we were thinking about Tableau. But yes, we can do it all through SAS in terms of our analysis. Any other questions? Thank you all.